Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem.
And I'm Nolan Ford. And today, Dave, we are talking about an award-winning NASA scientist.
Yes, Nolan, we have Fiona Harrison. She's an astrophysicist and chairperson at Caltech, as well as the principal investigator for the Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, our premier orbiting X-ray observatory that's better known and easier to say as NuSTAR. And then later on, we're going to have an interesting talk previewing one of our future guests about a certain amazing sample that came from the moon and wandered into his laboratory one day. First up, we are talking to Fiona Harrison about her work with NuSTAR, which was recently recognized with the Massey Award from the Committee on Space Research in London for her leadership as the principal investigator. Dr. Harrison, congratulations and welcome.
Well, thank you.
We've had Daniel Stern on from the Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, or NuSTAR, before, and I always find the description of the telescope and how it works to be fascinating. So can you refresh our memories? What exactly is NuSTAR? What makes it such a capable instrument for observing high-energy astrophysical phenomena like black holes and neutron stars?
Well, so NuSTAR is the very first telescope in space that can make real focused images of the cosmos in high energy or blue X-rays. So if you think of visible light, it's made up of a rainbow of colors, right? And so is X-ray light. So we've had powerful telescopes that have viewed the heavens in low energy X-rays. And if I want to make an analogy with visible light, these telescopes have made pictures of the universe in red and yellow X-rays. And what NuSTAR has done is added blue, indigo, and violet to the X-ray palette. So we can now make the very first, very sensitive images of the cosmos in high-energy or blue X-rays. And with this capability, we can make fundamentally new kinds of observations of some of the hottest, densest, and most energetic regions in the universe. So this is regions very close to black holes, the remnants of exploded stars, both the debris that gets flung out in the explosion and the compact, incredibly dense cores that remain afterwards. These are called black holes or neutron stars. And to build NuSTAR, to make the first truly focused images, we had to develop new kinds of X-ray lenses that worked in this part of the X-ray spectrum, new kinds of detectors that we developed in my labs and in labs of my collaborators around the country and, in fact, the world. And, you know, we started this back in the late 90s, and, you know, by experimenting and building these new kinds of lenses and detectors, we were able to make this telescope that can view the heavens hundreds of times deeper with 10 times crisper images, breaking up the X-ray light into its constituent colors for the first time.
For our listeners, could you just kind of describe what it would look like in orbit to them?
Yeah, so first off, it's a very long telescope. It turns out that unlike visible light, X-rays only reflect at very glancing angles. So that means that because they only deflect a little bit, the detectors have to be very far away. So the length of NuSTAR is basically 10 meters, 33 feet, or the length of a school bus. And we have two X-ray lenses on one side, and then two X-ray digital cameras that register the images. You can think of this kind of like your cell phone camera, but working to detect and image X-rays.
The mission's about 4 years old now, having launched in 2012. Give us your short list of its most impressive accomplishments.
Sure. You know, I think actually the most fundamentally new thing that NuSTAR has done is to make pictures of the debris or the shrapnel left over from the explosion of massive stars. So these are stars that are 10 to 20 times the mass of the sun. You know, in the early universe, we just had hydrogen and helium, a little bit of lithium, and most of the other elements in your body, carbon, calcium, nitrogen, et cetera, were forged in stars and in the explosions that ensue when they burn up their fuel. So generations of these stellar explosions that are called supernovae forge and distribute all the elements in your body. And fundamental as this process is, it's been mysterious how these stars actually explode. A lot of effort has gone into understanding this. Huge computer codes attempt to simulate the process and figure out what is the mechanism that can make a star that's collapsing because it no longer has any fuel to burn to keep it from the eventual demise, pull of gravity, to something that explodes. It's really hard to make something that's imploding explode. And NuSTAR has shed new light on this by making the first images of the radioactive shrapnel that glows for hundreds of years after the explosion. So it's kind of like crime scene investigators that are looking at the debris of the explosion, trying to piece together the mechanism of the bomb. Previous low-energy X-ray telescopes have made pictures of the hot glowing embers called supernova remnants, but NuSTAR can see X-rays that come from one element turning into another, and in particular the element titanium turning into calcium. This emits X-rays that NuSTAR can see. And what's special about this radioactive material is it's produced in the very core of the explosion, right at the dividing line between what falls inward onto the compact remnant, which is a black hole or a neutron star, and what gets spewed out into the cosmos, eventually forming other stars and planets and life. And so NuSTAR therefore allows us to trace the shape of the explosion. And what this picture tells us is the key to the explosion is the sloshing around of the core of the star, which bubbles like boiling water before it explodes. And this is first direct evidence we've had that this is what enables stars to explode. So that's one of my personal favorites. But we've also made fundamental observations of massive black holes that reside in the centers of galaxies, and looking at the distribution of these massive black holes over cosmic time, telling us how, and in particular, we can see black holes that are enshrouded by a lot of dust and gas because X-rays are fundamentally very penetrating. And this tells us how the black holes influence their galaxies. And the other thing is we've made fundamental new discoveries that we didn't expect. Whenever you have a capability, a telescope that's much more sensitive than anything you've had before, you're going to discover things you didn't dream of. And for example, we discovered a glow or X-ray haze around the center of our own galaxy, where there's a 4 million solar mass black hole. And this haze or glow, it turns out, we think, arises from a previously unknown population of dead stars. We also have detected objects that are so bright we thought they were black holes, and they turn out to be, in fact, not be. So we've made a lot of interesting discoveries, and these are shedding light on some of the fundamental processes that create elements and shape the universe.
Do you have like a sense of a total number of black holes now that NuSTAR has detected that weren't known of before?
Well, of the ones that weren't known, so many of them were known when we peer up into the cosmos. You know, we can see hundreds of black holes outside our galaxy. Many of them were already known, but what NuSTAR can tell us about is how much dust and gas they're hidden behind. Previous X-ray telescopes couldn't actually tell if the black holes were just fundamentally dim or whether they were enshrouded with dust and gas. And so NuSTAR, by observing these, can tell us much more about the properties of the black holes. Now, we have discovered some new ones, but there are many thousand where we've been able to look at them and get new information that other X-ray telescopes have not been able to provide.
One of the questions that I get asked the most is, how do scientists know that black holes are really there if we can't see them? You being the expert, tell me how to best answer that as an educator.
Well, that's a great question. Look, if you have a naked black hole, you can't see it. Well, I'll get into that in a minute. But black holes are black. Light can't escape from them. So what you're actually seeing when you see black holes in the X-ray band, you can also see them in optical light, you're seeing the material that's falling onto the black hole. So black holes, the gravity of the black hole attracts materials because the black holes don't live in isolation. They live in galaxies where there's dust and gas. And as this dust and gas gets attracted by the gravity of the black hole, friction turns the gravitational energy into heat. Basically, imagine rubbing your hands together and they warm up. Well, this material sort of rubbing against itself as it falls onto the black hole, it heats up and it glows. And it's that glowing that we see. Now, the X-ray band is special because if you imagine looking at a galaxy, first let me remind you that every massive galaxy like the Milky Way has a supermassive black hole. That is a black hole 1 million to 1 billion times the mass of the sun at its heart. And if you just look at these galaxies in the optical, what mostly you see is stars shining. But if you look in the X-ray, the stars don't shine in the X-ray. What you're seeing is this hot material and regions where particles get accelerated close to the speed of light. And that outshines basically everything else in the galaxy. So X-ray telescopes are very good at picking out black holes. Now, let me get to one exception. And that is, you probably heard of the big LIGO discovery,
yes.
Gravitational waves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was two black holes with no material falling onto them. The gravitational wave window is a way you can actually see ripples in space-time from black holes that are moving without material around to heat up and glow. So that's a fundamentally new thing, where we've actually, when you have two black holes spiraling into each other and radiating gravitational waves, there you see radiation produced by the black holes themselves, not by the material around them.
You're listening to Blue Dot on NSPR, and we are talking to Fiona Harrison. She's a professor of astrophysics at Caltech and principal investigator for NuSTAR, the orbiting X-ray telescope. She recently received the Massey Award from the Committee on Space Research for her leadership role on that mission. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit. You're, of course, the leader of a team of people that work on this project. Tell us a bit about that leadership role and your relationships with the team members.
Yeah, so first, you know, I want to say, even though I received the award, that this really represents the work of an incredibly talented team. You know, I've had the privilege of working with some really exceptional people, and NuSTAR's success is a result of all of their hard work. I'll remind you that NuSTAR is a small explorer. That's the smallest scale standalone astrophysics platform that NASA launches. And these small missions are very challenging. They're done with a cost cap. In other words, you can't spend more money than they give you. They have to be built quickly as a result, so the team has to be fast, efficient, and very disciplined. And I worked closely with a core group of about a dozen people to lead the team, who led the larger team. We had to communicate and work very cohesively so we could make the right decisions in a timely way. And this was a really great experience because we learned in this process to listen and respect one another. And what made it so great is we all had the same goal, to build a great telescope to do fantastic science.
Fiona, do you have a basic piece of advice just for anyone in an important leadership position?
Yeah, so first, put together a team that you trust and then listen to them. It's not about making decisions yourself. It's about motivating a team and then trusting them. And I found that problems are best solved through brainstorming and teamwork. And so everybody, and especially the PI, has to put aside egos and listen. And so that would be my advice. Again, put together the team and then trust them.
Well, obviously you must have done that well, because Neustar has been fabulously successful.
It's been a lot of fun.
It is. It's very interesting. And I'd like to go back to the science a little bit. You're interested in the highest energy types of phenomena in the universe. Why do you think there's such important things to understand in terms of our gaining a better understanding of the origin and evolution of the cosmos?
Yeah, so we already talked about the remnants of massive stars, the supernova explosions, because over the course of the universe, that's what creates elements. Without them, there wouldn't be life, and we can understand fundamentally new things about that process. But in addition, I should point out, I already mentioned the fact that every galaxy like the Milky Way has a supermassive black hole in its center. And you know, this is something that really has only been discovered over the last couple of decades. And what's even more fascinating is these black holes actually shape how the galaxies evolve and change over time. And that's because these black holes, we've already talked about the fact that matter can fall onto them, this releases energy, that energy can change the way that stars form and evolve. And so these black holes are a fundamental constituent of the universe in that they help shape it, help shape going from sort of the cosmic soup that existed shortly after the Big Bang to the incredible diversity that we have today. And so Neustar, by looking at these black holes, understanding their properties, and then teaming up with other observatories like the Hubble Space Telescope, like the WISE mission, the Spitzer mission, can then look at the galaxies and the properties of the black holes and see how they're related. Again, you know, helping us understand how they influence the growth of galaxies over cosmic time.
And, you know, that kind of leads to my next question, is that all of these observatories, and NASA has a fleet of them over the years, they all examine the universe at these different wavelengths of the electromagnetic spectrum, from the lowest frequency, lowest energy radio waves, you know, all the way up to gamma rays, and, you know, your X-rays are right there close to them as those high energy ones. Well, talk a little bit about, you know, how Neustar fits in with this big picture that we've gotten in this, what I would call the golden age of space-borne astronomy, the last decade, how much that we've learned about the universe because of all of these different ways of looking at it.
Yeah, you know, it's absolutely right that it's really the first time in human history, you know, where we haven't been limited by an optical telescope on the ground. We can look, you know, over the whole electromagnetic spectrum, from radio waves all the way up to gamma rays. And, you know, the analogy that I like to make is, you take a picture of a galaxy in black and white, there's only a certain amount of information you can get. But if you can make a color photograph, you can look at the different colors, and the red colors will tell you where there's dust and warm dust, where stars are forming. The blue colors will tell you where there's hot young stars, and you just learn, get so much more information. By expanding from the radio waves all the way to the gamma rays, we can now look not just at the stars, we can look at the dust, we can look at the black holes, we can look at where there's very hot material that's radiating in the X-rays, very cool regions that we see in the radio. And so you just get a wealth of information that you could never have if you were just limited, you know, to a narrow part of the spectrum.
It's amazing. There's so much to learn. And I think Nolan has a question along those lines.
Yeah, Fiona, you're also very busy as a professor of astrophysics at one of the premier research institutions in the world, Caltech. What do you most enjoy about that part of your career?
That's easy to answer. What I enjoy most is working with students and postdocs, watching them thrive, watching, just, you know, what, one of my favorite things in the whole world is when one of my students comes in and, you know, with a piece of data they've analyzed and says, look, you know, I have this theory of why this object looks like this, and just the excitement, you know, and of discovery and sharing this with young people is really a thrill. I have to say I'm now also an administrator. I am a dean, basically. And administration is kind of lonely, but doing science, there's nothing lonely about that. It's incredibly fun. It's collaborative, and it's just about the wonder of discovery and learning something new.
Well, congratulations again on the Massey Award, and Fiona, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Fiona Harrison, professor of astrophysics at Caltech and principal investigator of the Nuclear Spectroscopic Telescope Array, better known as NuSTAR. When we come back, we're going to hear an interesting story about a lunar sample that wandered into the lab at JPL. So we're talking to Ken Williford the other day about the Mars 2020 rover, and he shared with us a fascinating story about a sample that came into his lab. And Ken, would you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah. Just yesterday, unexpectedly, a friend and colleague of mine here at JPL called me up and said, "Hey, I've got a lunar sample. Can I use your lab to do a sample transfer into another container?" And so I said, "Oh, sure." So I met him in the lab, and it turns out that this sample was what's called the contingency sample. It's not something I had heard of before, but this happens to be the first sample that Neil Armstrong took during Apollo 11 as soon as he got on the moon. And it was actually a sample of lunar regolith, so sort of lunar soil. It's like a fine sandy dust. And anyway, we opened it up there in the lab and transferred it into his sample container, and we had one tiny little grain. It was the size of a very small sand grain, and I took that down to the electron microscope today and had a look, and it's just fantastic, very exciting, mind-blowing stuff.
What a piece of scientific and human history to be, you know, to be working with in your lab.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
And for our listeners, the contingency sample was, you know, when they first landed on the moon, they didn't know if they might need to, you know, take right back off. They may not have time to spend, you know, collecting rocks. So the contingency sample is, you know, we're on the moon. We're going to at least get something back to Earth if something goes terribly wrong. And that was called the contingency sample. So that was the first sample ever collected on the surface of the moon by Neil Armstrong. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, absolutely. These things tend to happen once in a while at JPL. Being around this place, interesting things come up and stumble across your path. So
your buddy brings you a moon rock, and you know, did he tell you immediately that you know what it was, or did you have to kind of work that out of him?
He told me as soon as I met him. He had two different samples. He had one from Apollo 11 and one from Apollo 16. He sort of said, you know, should we do the Apollo 11 sample first? I said, yes, do
yes.
That one.
Oh, goodness.
And he's going to come back in a few months and we'll look at the other one. But it was just so, so special.
Thanks for sharing that wonderful story with us.
Great to be on. It's a real pleasure.
And again, that's Ken Williford, Deputy Project Scientist for Mars Rover 2020, talking about working with the very first sample from Apollo 11 to come back to Earth in his lab. What a cool story that is, Nolan.
That was an awesome story, and a nice preview of what's more to come with Kenneth on next week's episode of Blue Dot. Speaking of previews, this past weekend, Dave and I collected some audio from the Lassen Dark Sky Festival, and I wanted to share some of that with our listeners now. Here's my interview with Dave in Loop D of the Manzanita Campground in Lassen Volcanic National Park as he was helping visitors with the high-powered telescopes provided by the festival.
So, if you want to see some Milky Way people that are waiting at the end of the line, I'm going to point my laser for
okay,
you.
Okay, honey, here you go.
Who would like to look?
You want to see the Milky Way?
Emily.
I'd like to look through the binoculars.
Look at
so you're just going to look up here, right in there, and you'll see lots and lots of stars. See lots of stars?
Yeah.
Yeah? Cool.
That's the Milky Way, sweetie.
Yeah. Yep, you're looking up at the Cygnus part of the Milky Way where they're discovering all of the exoplanets. So we've discovered over 1,000 planets up in the part where you're looking. So almost every star you see has planets going around it. Yeah, wow, huh?
That's cool.
Anybody else want to look while you're waiting? We are just above the Manzanita Lake Campground in a nice kind of a meadowy area, open forest area here. And it's got a nice view of the sky. I can see the Big Dipper to the north, and it's pointing out the North Star Polaris. So we've got a nice kind of almost 360 degree view around here. And it's just gorgeous. So this is one of the viewing sites. There's Manzanita Lake here, where most of the campers in the summertime come to Manzanita Lake. It's a very popular campground. And then we also have viewings at Bumpus Hell, at the parking lot there. And that's a really nice dark sky site because it's a little higher in elevation, about 8,000 feet. And then also at the Kom Yamani Visitor Center down there at the southwest entrance. But this is always one of my favorite places to be because you got all the people that are campers here. And they can. What's nice about here, they can walk from their campsite, look through the telescope, see the stars, and then they can walk back and go climb in their tent or roast marshmallows or whatever. And it's just a really nice experience. They don't have to drive anywhere. But there are people here, too, that you know have driven from hither and yon just to come up and see this tonight. The most common question is, you know, what constellation is that or what star is that? I always like to point out the Summer Triangle, which is directly over our head. And it's kind of cool because there's three really bright stars. Almost directly over our heads right now is Vega. And I'll point that out with my laser pointer for those of you who might be listening to me over there. So there's Vega, and that's 26 light years away. So if you're 26 years old, you know, that light is as old as you are. If we look over here, that's Deneb, and that's 1,600 light years away. So if you're 1,600 years old, you're over 1,000, that light's as old as you. And then over here is Altair, and if you're a teenager, 16-year-olds, that is 16 light years away. So if you're 16 years old, that light's as old as you are.
I'm 13.
So 3 years, it'll catch up to you.
No.
Or you'll catch up to it.
Well, Dave Shalom, thanks so much for being on Blue Dot today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I love the show. It's one of my favorites. The host is a little bit, sometimes he's a little, I don't know, a little too full of himself. But other than that, I think it's good. That Nolan guy, I think he's doing a good job.
Nice.
And I like the young lady they have on there now, Sarah Bohannon.
Oh,
she's
yeah,
wonderful.
She's great.
They need to keep her. Get rid of that Dave guy and just keep Nolan and Sarah, and you've got it made.
Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio. Visit us at mynspr.org, where you can find archives of our past shows. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Shlom. Nolan and I remind you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.